Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh, my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carey Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Okay, here we go. Wednesday night, first Wednesday after the official lockout by the NFL, owners of the players, or official show after the decertification of the Jaguars Union.
However you want to put it.
Jaguars Union, sorry, Players Union.
Players Association.
So what is it now? Just a bunch of guys, right?
Yeah,
or it's going to be ruled with it.
We'll know,
April 6th.
Yeah, first week of April.
Yeah, so it's a couple weeks away still. So still really nothing to report.
No.
And in doing so, Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher steps in for the very first time. Hi, John, how are you?
Big chair to fill, Brian. Big chair to fill.
Yeah, it's a low chair, actually.
Yeah, and John comes in here sporting his Indiana tan and his workout gear. Very
that's
nice,
right.
John.
That's about right. That's about right. The Indiana tan. It's a year-round tan for me.
Can I put my sunglasses on for them legs? Woo!
How is it being back in Jacksonville?
As we discussed, you know, it's been a couple of months now since I initially took the job. It's been strange being home. It's been great being home. And after 10 years, you got a lot to get used to.
Yeah.
Being back in town, but it's one of those things when you're in your hometown, you know it. And just driving around and you know seeing some of the things I grew up around, it's been pretty cool.
Some of the things you haven't too. I mean, St. John's Town Center was a great big field full of sand dunes and Christmas trees the last time you lived here.
The high end shopping was the avenues at that time.
And my things
real.
Have changed.
I've been to St. John's a couple of times when I was in town with the Colts.
Right.
But I've never really been in that area since it is now. And I still haven't been back. I just got back last week, and I've really just been driving back and forth to where I'm staying. And so I really don't have a good feel as to how much it's changed, except you see glimpses of it, and it's pretty remarkable.
Kind of an interesting time to come into this job.
Yeah, to say the least.
With labor being the situation that it is. What's your take a couple days into this?
Well, just from talking to people, and, you know, most of what I know is probably what you guys know, in that it's sort of what you read, and it's been interesting to see the if-then scenario sort of take place over the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And it really looks like this April 6th date, if they rule that the lockout is valid, well, it's going to give the owners the real upper hand, and you can't really see the players lasting too deep into the season if there's a lockout.
No.
To me. And, to the other side of it, if they rule the lockout's valid, I'm not so sure it's not going to – I think it was like this when you first came to the league, Jeff. That
yeah, it was an association,
really,
and it was all in court. And then all of a sudden, you know, the rulings came about, and all of a sudden there was a collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't have to go through what happened in 87.
Right.
You know, I kind of came in when, you know, the union had decided to decertify. And business kind of went as usual until
right.
the court system played out. And really, I didn't get to see the kind of, I guess, the ugly side of labor, which was the strike.
Right, that's what I was getting at.
Which now, it's not a right. strike, it's a lockout.
When you were in it, there was a lot going on that, you know, hugely impacted the league, allowed you to become a rich man eventually.
But, absolutely.
But
free agency.
Right.
I mean,
but
that's what it was all about then.
There was none of the, I was a fan at the time. And never really had much of an awareness that there were, you know, very important landmark things going on.
Oh,
so I guess what
huge.
I'm getting at is, if they rule that the lockout is invalid, you get the idea that it's going to go back to sort of what it was when you came into the league. A lot of very important stuff going on,
mm-hmm.
but not really affecting the fans that much.
Yeah, and then to me, I mean, the biggest thing here is that, you know, back then I think there was core issues at stake.
Sure.
You know, free agency and, you know, I mean, back then it was Plan B alone.
Right.
You know,
right.
and Plan B was, I mean, come on. I mean,
right.
Plan B was not a way for teams to improve.
Right.
But, I mean, core issues were at hand, and whereas now there's not really any core issues. It's just money.
Right.
You know, which is, I think when you've got just money being the issue, You know, for the past week, we've seen the owners make statements and the players make statements. And, you know, it seems like, you know, one side is trying to garner support from the fans on each side. And to be honest with you, I don't think the fans are swaying one way or the other.
No.
Because the fans are going, you know, this argument is about money. There's nothing that, you know, I can say, you know, boy, based on principle, I agree with him. Or based on this principle, I agree with them. You know, that's not there.
It hasn't gotten ugly yet, though. You know? No. I mean, and maybe it won't. I mean, obviously, Adrian Peterson put his foot in his mouth.
As far as we know, it hasn't
that
gotten ugly.
That was more stupid than ugly.
But. You know, I mean, there are some players that are saying that, you know, some of the bargaining sessions weren't pretty.
Right. Well, but that's just par for the course.
I mean, but that's part of negotiations. That's the way it is. I remember when I negotiated my first contract, and I don't say I, when my agent did, there were some things said in that process that, I mean, if I took things personal, right. You know, I wouldn't have been very happy.
How would you have handled, you know, you clearly were a guy who, if it had come to a strike or a lockout, I imagine you would have been, I don't know if on the front lines, but you were, I believe you were a player rep when I covered the team, and you were the guy who kind of stood up to Tom at times.
Yeah.
You would have been on the front lines, I imagine.
Yeah, probably would have been. You know, I think when I first came here, I was just a player rep.
Right.
And then my last 2 years here, I was an executive committee member, which is
right.
What, you know, your Drew Breeses and such are. And I'm sure if I was an active player, you know, at that time period,
right.
I would have been right there in that room.
And it's kind of a strange thing because, you know, I always reference who I covered. I covered the Colts for years. Peyton Manning's essentially suing the owners.
Yeah.
And here's a guy, I can't speak for Peyton, but I know he has a lot of loyalty to his particular owner. I know you really thought highly of Wayne when you
Absolutely.
Signed, but yet in a 94, 95, if something had happened, you would have been on the front line. So you're really getting guys who are suing an entity.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of cases, individually, there's not a lot of animosity,
no.
If you know what I mean.
No, and you know, there's something that's a little bit different. You remember back when the issue of labor came up, which was the decertification the last time around, you had the quarterback club.
Right.
Which, you know, the quarterback club at that time was a licensed arm of NFL Properties,
right.
Which was league owned. And whereas now you have the NFL Players Association has all of those big names, whereas back then
right.
All the big name quarterbacks were already with the marketing branch of the league. And
right.
So it certainly has changed. You know, and to me, the core issues are, I don't know, I guess you could say that they're not, they don't invoke a lot of opinion.
Well, the core issue is, are the players going to give money back for the development of new revenue streams, or are the owners going to,
you know,
develop more revenue streams with their share of
it? And I'll keep saying this, and John, you probably got some opinions on this, but I strongly believe that the owner should have some accounting for costs. And to me, the players really need to understand that part of the equation.
Right.
But from I understand the player standpoint, and that they say, well, prove to us that what you're taking off the top now is not enough of accounting of the cost. So, I mean, I understand how this argument has come about. And I also understand the part to where the owners don't want to open their books. I mean, because, hey, if that's a family business, that's none of your business.
Right.
So it makes it difficult. And
I want to see an owner come back just for fun and say, all right, you open your books.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because what they really want is to know the profit margin. That's what mm-hmm. D. Smith said. We want to know the profitability of each team. Well, why? I mean, is there a certain margin where it's excessive to them or a certain margin where, oh, we've got to help their profitability? What were they going to do with that information?
Well, to me, it's simple. I mean, to me, to rectify this whole issue, it's very simple in that you go back to a designated revenue model,
mm-hmm.
not a total revenue model.
And let's remind people what
that is. Designated revenue model.
The DGR, which is what the first CBA was based on, had a pool of money. There were tickets, advertising, signs and program ads, parking, concessions, and licensing rights.
Mm-hmm.
There may have been something else in there, but generally it was a limited pool, and then everything else the owners got to keep to cover their costs. And now in the total football revenue model, local radio and television rights are in that pool, naming rights are in that pool. Every single, and in fact, one of the things that was key here was the club seat revenue was not part of the DGR. Remember, because half the cost of the club seat, when they first put it together here, was a club membership. Well, that money did not factor into the DGR, but in TFR, total football revenue,
it's all
now
in.
Now Wayne had to write a big chunk of his revenue that came from the club memberships to the players. That changed the dynamic completely.
It did. I mean, to me, that changed the face of the entire relationship.
Well, and you saw that the organization, the Jaguars organization, if you've ever been around it, was downsized dramatically. I mean, I just to use myself as an example, I was a full-time employee here.
Right.
Benefits, pension, 401, all that stuff. Broadcasting had a six-member department. Joe Fortunato was as well. And when that CBA was passed in 2006, a year later, the broadcast department was no more because you didn't have the revenue to pay for it that you once did. So, and that's happened all over the league. So the cost structure that you mentioned, it really is. That's the big issue.
That happened to you too, John, didn't it? I mean, kind of over time, not immediately, but I mean when...
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Colts.com.
Yeah, Colts.com.
Yeah, I don't know that that was specific to that. There were some different issues there. But, you know, certainly I think the thing that – I know the players have their side. And I know the ownership side, it's easy to come down on both sides and say, well, players are greedy, owners are greedy. But the bottom line, and I think you alluded to this, the owners do have a responsibility, even beyond making money for their own pocket. They have to have a structure – that allows the league to grow not just over the next 2 or 3 years, but over the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the same league that it was in 1995. It's a much bigger league. There's more debt involved. There's more, you know, why the NFL Network has come along. There are more things that have to be done to allow everything to continue. I know that sounds very much like a mouthpiece statement.
No, it's
but
not,
I think there is some truth to the owner's side. I don't think a mass group of owners – in this economy would risk 3, 4, 5 months potentially of uncertainty and therefore some ticket problems, some, you know, some momentum slowing issues just for greed. I think a lot of the owners are looking at this saying, we have got to get a system that works
for the long term.
For the long term. And players understandably aren't that concerned about a 15, 20-year process.
Yeah.
No, it can't be because the average career is what, 4.3
years? I wouldn't be
years?
If I was a player. I mean,
it's tough to.
This is one of those classic
be.
Cases where, and it's why you reach an impasse in things. Both sides believe passionately in what they're talking
and
about.
And as we go to break, just a quick example of where the league is growing, 3D television. We had this conversation last week with Mike Perkins about the cost structure involved, just in the teams adopting a 3D model for their video use. And, of course, if the networks are going to use it. Everybody, you know, for their NFL Edge matchup shows and those kinds
right.
of shows, everyone's got to be on the same page. That's a huge infrastructure cost.
Right.
Which gets no accounting under the current
exactly.
deal.
So they can't go forward into 3D television without taking a loss in some way, shape, or form unless they can figure a way to account for the cost. So, all right, that's enough of that. We'll talk football with John Osher from Jaguars.com when we return. Jaguars this week on a Wednesday evening, News Talk Radio, WOKV, depend on it. Welcome back, Jaguars, this week on a Wednesday evening. From the studios at Everbank Field in Jacksonville, Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggam, and Joe Fortunato, special guest from Jaguars.com, John Osher. Calls, questions, comments, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. We're working the Facebook thing, too.
Yeah.
Well, Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars.
And, hey, by the way, John, the new series of articles that you're doing on Jaguars.com, love the idea.
Which one?
The college draft.
Yeah.
And before you tell people what it is, I love the idea, and it's basically John is going to do with fans kind of a first-round selection pick every day, right?
Right.
And I love that idea because, you know, Brian knows, Joe knows, I'm not a huge college football fan.
Right.
I just don't have the time.
Right.
And you
Same
watch
here.
So much NFL, you don't watch a lot of college prospects.
Right.
And so I'm looking forward to reading the articles and have read your first two, the one that kind of, you know,
right.
described what you were going to do and then your first pick of the draft, Blaine Gabbert, right?
Correct.
Correct. Very nice. I like it.
Well, it's something I did on the blog that I had the last couple of years. And when I say blog, I mean it was a blog with very low readership, but we got a lot of feedback on it. So I thought that if, you know, obviously the readership here is so well-established and Vic did such a great job of already having the fans interactive, that I had a feeling with the number of draft questions I was getting in the mailbag that it would be something the fans would really warm to. And I'm sort of like you. I follow college football as much as I can during the season.
Right.
But I've got a 14-year-old son. You know, I try to do things with him on the weekend. I can't sit and watch four or five games. So as a result, I really start sort of studying these guys at the combine. And I try to use the draft lead-up as a way to sort of get to know these guys. Mm-hmm. I don't try to pretend that I know a whole lot about Blaine Gabbert. But I hope that in having the discussion with the fans, doing some research, having some interaction, that, you know, we can all learn together.
Well, Gabbert works out tomorrow at the University of Missouri.
Well, that's correct, yeah. And it is fascinating, too, since, you know, I started covering Jeff in 95. We got to know each other in 95.
Yeah.
Isn't it fascinating how much the draft process has changed? You know, I imagine it was drafted. Did anybody even know you had a pro day, Jeff?
No.
Back then, I mean,
we didn't, did you have a pro day?
Well, you know what pro day for me was that, you know, hey, one of the coaches would say, hey, so-and-so from the Miami Dolphins is going to be coming into town. He wants to work you out. I mean, I think I had 8 individual workouts. There was no such thing as a pro day where you worked out for everybody that was there.
And now they're headline new. I mean, it's you know, like one thing we were talking about the lockout earlier. It's sort of cliche to talk about how much the web and the internet has changed things. But I really wonder how much the web and the instant news cycle and, you know, even Pro Football Talk, where everybody goes to find out what's going on, how much that's going to change the pace of what goes on once, you know, you start getting deep into this thing, if it goes deep. I know it's changed how people cover the draft. It's changed everything. But there was obviously nothing close to the web in 87 the last time there was a work stoppage.
No.
And you just wonder if you're going to get a more immediate idea of how angry the fans are at certain times because you have more interaction.
Well, from a fan perspective, for sure. I mean, you can see that right now.
Right.
From an information perspective, it's just overload.
Absolutely.
I mean, and with all due respect to, you know, Peter King and Pete Prisco and these guys who write on the national level, other than maybe an interview, the stories are pretty much the same.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I mean, even the legal experts on the different websites are writing generally the same stuff.
Right. But I can write, you know, the last strike was 87. I was a senior in college. And, you know, even then it was picking up the pace, but you had to wait until ESPN came on that night or, you know, maybe grab a USA Today in the library. You know, I'm talking like an old man, but I just think there's going to be, it'll be a different pace. There'll be some subtle differences because of that, I guess.
Just as an example, you realize almost a third of all Americans get their primary news from their phone now, right?
Yeah, I do.
So I've got a little Twitter app on my phone.
Right.
And last Friday, I was following. I've got, you know, you got different streams. I've got a news and a sports one. And I was just literally all day long, I just keep hitting this thing because there'd be updates. You know, nothing. We're waiting. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when decertification came, there were 16 different tweets from different people saying, here it is, here it is, here it is, here it is.
Right.
And so it really is instantaneous. I mean, we always talked about radio being the most instant medium back in the day because TV couldn't get a camera set up. It took time to print a story. Radio was always there first. Well, now the internet and these phones and Twitter has changed the whole dynamic.
I mean, I was stating the obvious, but I just think there's definitely going to be, you know, I think the reaction, it'll be harder to ignore the outrage, particularly as the season gets closer.
What if a guy like Chad Johnson pops off to a local paper? That used to be one thing.
Sure.
Well, now it's viral and worldwide fast, and then you've got guys who, of course, want to retort to it.
Sure.
You can't avoid it.
It's amazing, though, how everywhere that I go, the first question that I get, when's it going to get solved?
Right.
How long is this going to last?
Right.
You know, and I mean, it's amazing just by what's going on now. I mean, it's amazing how big the NFL is.
Right.
I mean, holy cow. I mean, and it doesn't matter where I go. Restaurant, gym, you know, a store.
Think about what fantasy football has done to this. How many people are involved in that?
I was at Mark's Power Motors talking to Jerry the other day, taking him back a pressure washing part, and two guys walk in, and first things out of their mouth, you know, what do you know about this labor impasse? Right. Holy cow.
In 94, when I was with the TU, I covered Florida in 93 and 94. And Florida's a pretty big deal. You know, Spurrier was there. They had not won the national championship yet, but they were getting to that point. And, you know, Joe DeSalvo, my sports editor, called me. And, you know, I was talking about the Jaguars job. And at the time, I was sort of, well, you know, Florida's a big deal, this, this. And, you know, it was not as clear cut then how big the NFL was compared to college football. And of course, in the 16 years since, it's just got
king.
Obviously, college football is bigger here than it is in most markets. But just at the time, the NFL, Jordan was still in the NBA. The NBA was a big deal. The NFL was biggest, but it was not the behemoth.
No.
You know, 16 years later. And it sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's just a different – it's a different beast. And financing it is a vastly different beast than it was when I started covering the league in 95.
We need a break for news. Can you hang another segment?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it. John Osher stays with us here, Jaguars, this week after the news at the bottom of the hour here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Hey, about 20 minutes left in the program this evening. John Osher has generously agreed to stay with us for a while. So if you've got thoughts, although we're dominating the airwaves here by opening our mouths, 355-NFL-1. 800-355-6351. So who haven't you talked to yet that you're eager to?
Well, I'd say an awful lot of the player. I mean, most of the players, you know, I didn't get a chance to talk to Tyson before the, before this started. Ryan Robinson had already done a story on him before I came aboard. And, you know, I'm kind of fascinated by him because he kind of strikes me as, you know, when I came in and I was covering it in 95, Boselli was kind of the guy. And it strikes me that, you know, Tyson is sort of the guy that Gene drafted. He's a big-time guy. He's going to be the core of the defense. Eugene on offense, you know, same deal. Those high draft picks that are clearly building blocks on and off the field are always fascinating. How will they handle that? You know, and everything I've heard about Tyson is he's a blue-chip kid on and off the field.
Yeah.
So, I look forward to talking to him. I'm just kind of looking forward to that first process where I can get 2 or 3 weeks and just kind of talk to different guys. I'm probably a tenth of the way through that from talking to some of the coaches and talking to Gene Smith, but it really takes about a year to fully sort of grasp a comfort level when you're working a beat, if that's what you want to call this.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's got to be a level of trust.
Absolutely. Right.
I mean, it takes guys a while to feel comfortable with seeing your face, knowing
sure.
who you are, what you
sure.
do, and knowing that you're trustworthy.
Exactly. You know, no matter who you work for. And it took, you know, when Pete and I were covering the Jaguars in 95, you know, it just takes a while to get to know different guys. You do a story on them. You kind of BS with them in the locker room for a while. It's like any relationship. You know, we got to know each other very early, but, you know, it was probably October, November of that first year where, I had any sort of a rapport or a trust with you.
Yeah.
And it just takes time. And that's one thing I like about this bunch, though, from the people I've talked to is they all seem to very much be on the same page in terms of where the franchise is headed.
Mm-hmm.
There's an energy to it, and it feels like it's going – I don't say uphill because that sounds like it's a struggle, but it feels like an ascension time.
Yeah.
And that may be a little bit because I'm so new to it, but overall, that's the vibe. And a lot of players are saying the same thing. Some of it's a little player speak. They're going to say the right things in the off season, but there is an energy and it seems to be moving forward in the right direction. That's a lot of fun.
355 NFL-1. Tom joined us from Green Cove Springs. First call of the night. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I'm sorry if you guys have already talked about this. I kind of am catching the show late. I just wondered, with Wayne Weaver's note that he wrote about how he was kind of disappointed in the players' union turning down what he thought was a pretty good deal, did you guys talk about at all what the parameters were, what the players' union was thinking about, what wasn't good about the deal and why they turned it down? Did you go over any of that?
No. No, we really didn't, and I don't know that we've seen the complete deal. Have you?
Yeah,
there've been
no, not really.
Of what it was, but
The hard part is deciphering.
We don't have it in our hands. So
yeah,
everything's
because
third party.
You know there were some things that were touched on, but then you know the other side will say, well, that's not true.
Right.
You know, you got the union calling Jeff Pash, the attorney for the owners, a liar, and Jeff Pash, you know, calling players or people with the union liars, and you know, we don't know. It's hard to give an opinion unless you actually see it right here.
Right.
You know, right in front of you, here's what we offered, but we don't have access to that.
Again, in negotiations, sometimes the offer is really a trial balloon. You're just trying to get a gauge on where they want to be
mm-hmm.
or where they will go. Yeah, and so it's tough to know how much.
And there's no sense of going over line item by line item because it's just you'll bang your head against the wall.
Right. And you don't want to fall asleep.
No. That'd make for good radio, Tom.
Appreciate the phone call, 355-NFL-1. Did you see today that the competition committee is talking about adjusting kickoffs?
Changes.
Exactly. Adjusting kickoffs up to the 35, that a touchback would go to the 25. So ostensibly it's easier to get it to the end zone, and you now make the decision more likely that someone would take a knee and take it to the 25, perhaps, than try to run it out.
And I imagine that's purely concussion limit contact.
Yeah, it's all about concussions. They're saying, I guess, that by moving the kickoff point back to the 35, because that's where it used to be at one point, then you would have more touchbacks, therefore less occurrences of high-speed collisions and therefore less concussions.
Well, what a difference that is.
But it changes the game completely.
I can remember three or four years ago, there was a movement in the complete opposite direction where they were trying to move kickoffs
to make
back
the game more high scoring.
Right, because the kickoff was perceived by the league as the most exciting play in the NFL. And, boy, doesn't that change typify what's going on right now?
Yeah, and it's, folks, look to Jaguars.com in the future. I sat down with the head coach, Jack Del Rio, and he had some pretty strong opinions on some of these. And I'm with them in that, you know, the commissioner is really looking to make the game safer. They're talking about expanding the defenseless player rule.
Well, can I read this list real quick?
Yeah.
A quarterback in the act of throwing. Okay, yeah. Well, the interpretation of that is so wide open. A receiver trying to catch a pass. A runner in the grasp with forward progress stopped. A player fielding a punt or a kickoff. A kicker or a punter during the kick. A quarterback after the change of possession, so they have an extra defender in a change of possession situation. A receiver who receives blind side block and a player already on the ground. That's just so wide open.
Yeah, I mean, it's
basketball on grass.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where you can certainly see both sides, because when you see guys who have played, you know, the Dave Duerson thing, you know, it's certainly fresh in people's mind, as is everything. I know that they're looking for a balance, and the spirit of what they're doing is probably right, Jeff.
Yeah.
And I get why they're doing it, but...
But they're going about it the wrong way.
Yeah, you just got to wonder when is too much, and it's not football anymore. And
yeah, that's
it's no longer the most powerful sport on earth.
You know, but you know, here's the thing. I mean, they're talking about making the game safer, but then they want to go to 18 games.
Right.
You know, come on. I mean, those two, they just don't go together.
Right.
The 18-game thing is as bizarre. I mean, it's not bizarre because we all know what it's about. But when you really start covering the league and examine it, I think people in the off season forget how beat up teams are in week 14, 15, and 16.
It's unbelievable.
It's easy to forget when you're sitting here in March how true that is. But, you know, because you played. It's really true that most of the time the postseason comes down to attrition.
Absolutely. And in some cases it does. Absolutely. That to me, the game is where it is today. I mean, the 800,000-pound gorilla in the sporting world, it's there for a reason, because the game is so pure. The game is loved. And to me, the commissioner has to be real careful about a lot of these, you know, player safety issues, about trying to change the game so radically that what got the league to the level of popularity, if you take a lot of that away, what happens? It could change all that.
Now, I may have told you this, and or maybe I haven't, but I have a very distinct philosophy on that, and this is that the people who make the most money in our society are those who take the biggest risks, make the most aggressive steps forward. And the reason that football players make the kind of money that they make is that they take big risks with their body. If it was basketball on grass, they wouldn't make $10 million a year to be a quarterback in the NFL. If it didn't require a death-defying feat, so to speak, in many cases, people wouldn't be interested in watching so rabidly as they do. And so if you take the risk out of the game, you take the reward out of the game as well.
Do you think, I mean, when you were 19, did you understand the risk, Jeff?
Probably not fully. I mean, you know, when you're, I mean, we all know, I mean, you're 18, 19, you know, you're made of steel. I mean, otherwise, I mean, if I thought that I wasn't, you know, bulletproof, I wouldn't have gotten on a motorcycle going 150 miles an hour with no shoes, shirt, or helmet one time.
At 43, you know, knowing the risks that were there and knowing that you've been through it, now living the life as a retired athlete, would you still play professional football for the money?
I'd do it all over again.
Right.
I'd do it all over again.
Okay, folks, Joe's telling me we got to get a break in. Let's do it. We'll come back. Questions, comments, thoughts. Jeff is here. John Osher is kind enough to join us for the entire hour this evening from Jaguars.com. Call, welcome him back to town. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. We take this break, then return. More Jaguars this week right after this. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Okay, we've got 7 minutes left in the program. John's here. Jeff's here. Joe's here. You too, 355-NFL-1. So John, Jeff, Joe, we bring on Jim from Nocatee. Hello, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say real quickly that I heard your comments, you know, about 5 minutes ago on some of the possible changes to the game. And I just want to make two quick points that, number one, if they make the game, you know, let's use the word safer, you know, whatever change you want to, however you want to typify the change, if they dilute it or make it safer or something, I just think that would be in keeping, actually, with wanting to go to 18 games in the season. And I'm not asking them to. I'm just saying that if they choose to go to 18 games, then I think the two do go together, because the theory would be, well, let's make it a kinder, gentler game so we can last for 18. And then the other point I'd like to make is that if the game gets diluted, I mean, I live in Jacksonville and I love the city of Jacksonville. If we didn't have the Jaguars, I don't know that I'd really be care so much about the NFL. I came from Chicago and I've given up on everything in Illinois, but I love Jacksonville. Therefore, I hope for the I like for the Jaguars to win. So I pay attention to the NFL for that reason, but I don't know if I would pay so much attention to a diluted game. And I guess I'm a Jaguars fan because, as a friend once told me, if a team makes you mad, then you're a fan.
That's a beautiful thing. Jim, you sure you've given up on everything from Illinois?
I was going to say.
I don't know, man. I'm in Jacksonville. I love Jacksonville. What's in Illinois after you've been to Northeast Florida? And I mean that.
I don't know if he got it. Sorry, Jim. Hey, Jim, thanks for the call.
Sure thing.
355-NFL-1. Thoughts on that? I think he's obviously the minority, because the majority of people care about the NFL. Sports fans that care about the NFL are going to care whether their team is winning or not.
Yeah. I liked what he said about you know, he's a fan because it makes you mad. That's one of the things my predecessor always talked about that I really learned from him, is that, you know, the team really starts to matter to its core fans when it hurts to lose. Yeah. And, you know, that's I definitely think that has gotten instilled here more than when I left 10 years ago, certainly.
Yeah, and here's a question I wanted to ask this to Jim, but let him go. That was my fault. I should have asked it. But if the game is diluted, as he said, is it still the game you love? You know, if all these rules changes, and there was, Brian, we talked during a commercial about possibly going to two-point stances where,
right,
you know, is the game the same?
That was a proposal. I don't know that it was ever presented, but it's not, is it?
No, he just said he wouldn't want to be involved in a watered-down product.
Yeah,
right, but what constitutes watered down? Where's that threshold?
To me, I think the league really has to be careful. I mean, the game is popular for a reason,
right?
Because it's a fantastic product, and it is a game of violence. That's what it is. Right.
Gladiators. That's what it is. It's modern-day
gladiators,
and so there is player safety is paramount. They've invested how much money with Rydell to develop the Revolution,
mm-hmm,
which is the helmet that is supposed to prevent concussions. They're constantly working on player safety. It's just there's a threshold somewhere where you got to remember it's a dangerous game.
Well, to me, you know, I asked this question to John, and we both didn't know the answer, is that how many, you know, current or former players are on this competition committee that's talking about player safety? I don't know the answer to that, but the number doesn't jump out at me
that it's
very high. But, you know, for example, they're talking about moving the kickoff back, and I think Joe brought up a good point. What happens if you got a kicker who starts kicking this ball way up high in the air and is looking for more hang time? You still have the violent collisions happening, you know. And then they changed the wedge that they were used to allow to use on kickoff returns, and they said, well, you can only have a two-man wedge. It can't be a four-man wedge. And we saw penalties called this past year in which teams were called for violating that rule. Well, if a four-man wedge is no longer allowed, but you can have a two-man wedge and then another two-man wedge that's only a couple yards apart, isn't it essentially the same thing? Just eliminate the wedge altogether.
What if you eliminated the kicking game altogether? Would that fundamentally change the game?
No, I mean...
And the reason I bring it up is because Vic always used to say, if I were commissioner, I'd do away with the kicking game entirely. The ball would start at
absolutely
the 20-yard line.
Absolutely not. I mean, to me, special teams, John, think about all the special teams returns. What role would they have? What would Kasim Osgood and Montel Owens, role would they have in football?
Right. And I get your point. I'm just bringing it up.
I know.
But it's one of those things where it seems like they're really focusing on
the
kickoff.
It's an exciting
teams.
Part of the game. You can't lose the exciting parts of the game.
Yeah, I don't think it can be underestimated what a sea change, even proposing that rule, represents. Because, as I said, maybe during a break, 4 or 5 years ago, I can distinctly remember rules and discussion being done to try to increase that part of the game. I mean, they were moving the kickoffs
back. To make it more
back,
exciting, to have more returns.
You know, to get the fans more involved, to make it more exciting. And to reverse that quickly really shows you the extent to which they are trying to make this game safer, for better or for worse.
Yeah, we've got Doug who's hanging on. We got Doug's down at St. John's. We got about a minute, Doug, but the floor is yours for that long.
Thanks. Just first, Jeff, I remember you as a Jet, not as a Jaguar, because I wasn't in this city, but you were one heck of a player. I loved watching you.
Thank you.
And, I wanted to say the one thing, the strike, the players, the owners, open your books. I don't agree with that. It's a private business. Any other business would tell their employee, my wife went to her company or I went to mine and said, open the books. They'd laugh at me. They'd fire me, But, and then the other thing is, I know it's a brutal game. They're starting off at $400,000, $500,000 a year, up to $10 million or so, maybe $20 million at times.
50.
For the top. Yeah. So Carson Palmer's going to quit because he's got $80 million in the bank and $50 million in the hole if he continues. But what they got to stop arguing about this. Give these guys a retirement and give everyone $250,000 a year in medical or something for every player that plays. Is injured or plays at least 5 years, And if you get injured in your first year, give that to them for their life.
Doug, we got to go on that. Appreciate it. John, thanks so much. Anytime you want to stop in, there's a seat for you.
I appreciate that.
Boggy, see you later.
Enjoyed it.